Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 77 of Competitive Magic with the Carnies. I'm your host from Italy, Andrea Mengucci, and joining me we have Anthony Lee from Boston.
Hola.
And fresh of a Pro Tour Top 8, Arne Uschenbeth from Germany.
Hey, thanks for having me. Welcome.
Special guest Arne Uschenbeth replacing Javier for this episode, which is actually our first episode in a while. I'm sorry, we've been, I hope you missed us, but we're back. All right, Anthony, so I said in the intro that you're from Boston. Can you tell the listeners why is that?
Well, you said that because I'm in Boston. I don't know if I'm from Boston, but I'm here in between traveling between the Montreal Regional Championship and an NRG event in Indianapolis. So I thought I'd visit this place. It's on the right side of the country. It's very nice here. It's very pretty. So very nice to visit here. I learned a lot about Italian.
Yeah, when we made that last episode of 2023, you said that one of your New Year's resolution was to travel more after the events. And I guess you started with this post-Pro Tour Canadian plus North American trip.
Yeah.
That's good.
I can recommend doing that. I also did some extra days after the Pro Tour. I spent some time with the Handshake members and we had a good time in a national park in Washington.
That's great.
Yeah.
Where did you go?
It was a little bit outside. It was like a 3-4 hour drive, but you could also take the ferry. It was like on a peninsula, so it was like you could either drive around or take the ferry from the Seattle main downtown port right across, which had beautiful views across the lake. And then I think it was called Olympic National Park. Randomly, we drove and stopped by for the night because it was a 2-day trip. In the city of Forks, like a very small town, but it turned out that it was the town where they screen film produced whatever the Twilight movies. So I got a little Twilight souvenir just randomly coming across that. It was very nice, lots of nature, and we had Jesse Hampton and a friend of mine that I met through coaching, Kaifen, driving us there and being sort of our local guides, which was pretty awesome.
Nice, very cool. What about you, Anthony? Did you go to any park while any national park while in Canada?
Not any national parks, but there are some very nice parks. Alexander Hain took me to quite a nice park near where he lives in Montreal, and I just visited the Boston Commons yesterday with a friend of mine, Cole, who's here. So yeah, it's I guess I've been to not national parks, but just regular parks. They're very green. They're nice. They're squirrels. We don't have squirrels in Australia. I get excited every time I see a squirrel still. It's been good. I like squirrels.
Yeah, same. I never see squirrels here. And I remember last time we were in Chicago, there were so many near our house. And it was very sweet to just eat nearby them, just waiting for you to toss some food to them. It was cool. All right. So the topic of today is going to be standard. We're going to start with, of course, the Pro Tour analysis, talking about Arne's great success, talking about, I guess you can also talk about Javier's close success, who, of course, lost the win and into Arne.
That's why I'm here.
And then we're going to...
Yeah, I replaced Javier. Javier, that was not only for top 8, that was for the podcast.
Go.
Yeah, and then we're gonna talk about the Montreal Regional Championship, which happened last weekend, as well as I believe the Brazilian Championship. I think there's gonna be a full month of standard for the rest of the world, the European, the American RC, and also the Australian and New Zealand. These RC will happen at the end of the month. Speaking of which, Anthony, are we gonna compete in the Australian RC?
I can't, because I played in the Canadian one.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep, that's
I thought you could...
you think we could just travel to Brazil, play there, and go to Canada, and then go back to Australia? I mean, that would be a bit of a glitch in the system. I think user would have four qualifications by now.
That's fine. You're spending money. It's okay.
I don't think it works that way.
Right?
I thought so. All right. So you use your shot to, I guess you don't need the qualifications to Worlds either. So.
No, it's not really a shot. Like, it doesn't really. It's just a tournament to play for me, so it's all good.
That's cool, though. 2 days event with good players, so definitely fun one. I look forward to it. And but yeah, the format is going to be standard, so the same as the PT. I guess the players will have more time to learn about the new decks than we did. But let's start talking about the Pro Tour. So Arnen, you got there, you made the top eight with a 12-4 record. Is that right?
Yes.
And then you had a nice little 6-0 in draft. So maybe not only standard, but we can talk about something limited wise as well. I actually here on MTG Melee, I can see both of your decks. Were you on a feature match for the also for the first pod?
No, I was actually I never got a single limited feature match during the entire event. I wasn't in a feature pot, no. I was pot two on day two, yeah.
So you drafted, I see, blue-green and blue-black. So you love the blue color that was kind of underappreciated.
Well, I wouldn't say I love it. I mean, the first draft was, I started, I don't know, what was my first pick? I think it was a very weak pack. Where I took a 5-4 or something like that, like the Paladin gain free, and then just settled into blue-green after wheeling, I think, to make your own luck or getting them like 6th and 7th. I was like, okay, I guess blue-green is the way to do this. And then I opened an Oko in pack 2. I'm like, okay, this is this the PT, the one? Like opening Oko after being blue-green. Also the first time ever being in blue-green. I remember was
Let's explain which Oko, though.
Oh, yeah.
The ringleader, not the people of the ground.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Still pretty good. It's also good with my third pack, second pick, which if you scroll down a little bit, Vaultborn Tyrant.
Oh.
Yeah, it was pretty disgusting. In round two against Autumn Burchett, they had a really nice deck, and I got to copy the Vaultborn Tyrant with Oko, which was just absolutely nasty. And then you attack with the Oko, and like, yeah, sure, double block. I get another Vaultborn. Like, it's just... whatever.
Yeah.
The deck was pretty insane. And then on day two of the Dimir deck, I actually started with, I believe, 3 green cards, then took 2 white cards. So first 5 picks, non-blue black. Pretty rough draft because, you know, I didn't really see any green-white afterwards. Turns out Nicole, who was in the seat in front of me, was in green-white splashing black. So makes sense that I didn't get any green-white. And then, yeah, I had audibled into blue-black, and I thought my deck was like a 1-2 deck, maybe with some luck, a 2-1. But turns out that everybody in this pot, like 6 people in the pot were in green. So everybody had a little bit of a, worse green deck, right? And somehow I could sneak it out. I was really lucky. My Siphon Inside did incredible for me. Hitting multiple mythics during the draft. There was one situation where I was behind on board against David Olsen's green black creature deck, and he had like a bunch of X2s and a bigger creature, and then I Siphon Inside end of turn, and what do I see? A Harvester of Misery on top. That was pretty good.
Harvester of Misery is the sweeper that gives -2/-2.
Yeah, I killed like 3 creatures and blocked his biggest creatures. It was rather stupid, and just a testament. If you want to make top 8 at a Pro Tour, sure, you have to be good, put in a bunch of preparation, but you also have to be freaking lucky. And I certainly had some spots where I got really lucky. Like Nicole never played a third land in one of the games. Ben Mulligan to 6, kept the one lander, never played a second land in the final round against Ben Stark. You know, it's just, yeah. It's okay.
That's definitely is part of the game we play a lot. But yeah, congratulations on the 6-0 there. And the constructed deck of your choice was Esper Midrange, which, funnily enough, happens to be also the deck that me and Anthony played. So I guess we can share some of our experiences there. So
share some of the trauma we went through.
So the three of us, of course, take part in different teams. Anthony's in Temen Shake, you're in Team China Fireball, and I'm in Team Worldly Council. So it's cool that we arrived at the same almost the same deck.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, let's talk to us about how you and your teammates decided to go Esper, and then after you, Anthony also say same question to you.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing, right? Like, we all three of the biggest teams on the Pro Tour, we all chose the same deck, and we probably have different storylines and approaches and how we came to the conclusion and so on. Like Manguchi, I like from you, it sounded like from your Twitter post right before the tournament that you had a little bit of a struggle, at least during deck selection, but we can go there later. So I decided to play Esper. I mean, I was working on Teemo Analyst a good amount. I was working on Golgari Midrange. I was working on Esper. But yeah, didn't really get to make the Teemo Analyst matchup, that deck really work. We just figured out that if people were too hateful, and it seemed that would be the case, with Rest in Peace also being printed, that the deck isn't that greatly positioned. Turns out we were a little bit wrong, because it did have a pretty good win rate. But yeah, in any case, I like the Esper midrange against the Teemo Analyst matchup, so that made me like that deck. And then Golgari midrange, I just over time, as more we tuned our Esper list, I just gravitated more towards Esper because it just had a little bit more flexibility, a little bit more game against the go bigger decks with the counter spells and Tidebinder. Ultimately, I mean, we tried a bunch of various decks. We worked a part of the team, not me, worked a lot on Slowgurk, actually, and our list was very close to the Slowgurk Legends list that Sanctum of All crushed the tournament with. In our testing, we got destroyed by Convoke. I think that's just a bad matchup, to be fair. That was a bad matchup, so we... And then the Esper matchup, we also couldn't really get that to work. We didn't have the perfect plans or the perfect lists. Could definitely see that. Because, you know, Slowgurk, I think, had like a 60-something% win rate against Esper at the event. Then I also made multiple times the comment that I think the Slowgurk Legends deck is basically a midrange deck with like this combo aspect. And I sort of compared it to Esper midrange, where I just said, like, guys, instead of, sure, we don't have this powerful go-over-the-top combo, but we're also playing in midrange decks, all solid cards, great interaction, great mana, blah, blah, blah. Like, the Slowgurk deck is a four-color deck, so there's some issues, a bunch of legends, there's some issues, and just made the point that Esper is just a better midrange deck. Yeah, so I just ended up on Esper. It's the boring choice. I expected Esper to be, like, 30% of the field, which it turned out to be. I just prepped the list for the mirror, 4 vettings, 3 virtues. We found out those were the best things to be doing. I added an Aklazotz 2 minutes before decklist submission. I was the only one on the team. I was like, yeah, Esper is going to be a lot off the field. And I just said, like, I'm going to move the Tidebinder to the sideboard and just add the Aklazotz. And it was a good choice. So happy about that. And I think the rest of the slots are pretty, you know, we don't really have to talk much about those. That's how I got to Esper midrange. Sorry about the little long monologue there.
That was great.
Oh, the monologue is great. That's what I podcast for. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for telling a story about the Team CFB testing. And your team member mostly went on Esper. I played against Logan. He was on Esper. And I guess, no, you had Reed on Golgari, Nassif on Blue-White.
Yeah, we were split.
Use on Convoke, so actually a lot of
four,
different
four decks. We had 6 on Esper, 4 on Golgari, 2 on Blue-White, and 1 on... 7 on Esper, actually. And 1 on Convoke, yeah. The Golgari people, they like the Esper matchup. They like the cleanliness of the mana. Mosswood Dreadknight is a very good card. They were happy with the Bronco. The deck is fine. You know, it's a fine midrange deck. And then Convoke, you know, user didn't want to play the midrange mirrors and he just played Convoke. I also encouraged him to do so, honestly. Martin user is one of the best aggressive players out there. So I think Convoke is just a pretty solid choice for him. He had an 0-3 limited record and a 3-2 limit record in Constructed. So didn't make it today too, unfortunately. And then Nassif and Seth on Blue White, which turned out to be one of the best choices for the event. But they, like, Nassif really late started working on the deck and... I was just also afraid of like 50-minute round timers, which turns out I was good to be afraid of that. And just the draw bracket and so on. We had a lot of draws in this event, like more than maybe.
You took 0 draws.
Yeah.
You took zero draws.
I tried to play fast, but I beat Ben Stark in like extra turn three because he played lightning fast with blue-white control, which I really appreciated. We started, I think, game three with like 5 minutes on the clock or 6 minutes. It was incredible. We played so fast and I had a good draw and then beat him in extra turn. So almost would have gotten a draw. Yeah, this format, I think they just have to up the round time, but that's a different discussion. All right, I want to hear from you guys. So maybe one of you guys want to go deep on how you came to the conclusion of your decks and so on.
Yeah, go, Anthony. Let us know the team handshake standard testing process.
I don't know, this one was pretty tough because we had such little time between set release and the Pro Tour itself. So that was pretty tricky, but we were also kind of ravaged by, the testing house was kind of ravaged by illness, which cut into our resources a lot. So yeah, Esper just kind of ended up being a default. Like none of us were terribly enthusiastic about it or anything. Like, you know, we were like, oh, Esper's okay, you know, we're not going too wrong by playing it, probably not going right either, to be honest. And it was mostly about just settling on a deck that we knew was going to be okay and just trying to tune it well. That became our priority more than identifying the actual best deck. So for example, we also worked on Slowgurk and also had a list that was kind of close to what Sanctum had, but we weren't willing to take that risk because we didn't know how good or bad it could be, and we didn't know if we could tune it well in the time that we had left. So we all defaulted to Esper except Chris Larson, who was even more sick and felt that he couldn't physically play. Like, he could, like the Esper deck is often, the matchups are often very mechanically intensive, and they are also very technically difficult. He just felt he wasn't up to the task. He just submitted mono red, but everybody else played Esper, and it was okay. We had a few differences, I guess. Even within our team, we didn't agree completely on how Esper should be built. But the one that Javier and I submitted, and which Jesse Hampton also went along with, I think compared to Honest List, for example, we have fewer Deep Cavern Bats, more Fairy Mastermind and more Virtue, and less Denic. Yeah, and we have slightly different removal as well. That's mostly about the mirror. Like, we felt that Fairy Mastermind and Virtue of Loyalty were super important in the mirror, especially the Virtue, which a lot of people, I think, rated differently in the mirrors. But it was just so important to draw one that even if in multiples it's not that exciting, or in mirrors, having one more than your opponent was super important as well, that we thought it was worth playing for. And the fourth Virtue really is like a declaration of how much we cared about the mirror, because I don't think the fourth Virtue is good anywhere else, but we just thought Esper was going to be huge, because if we were struggling to find something good and just defaulted to Esper, then surely other teams with even fewer resources would probably do the same. So that was our guess. Funnily enough, we actually did the same thing you did, Anna, by removing a Tidebinder. The rest of our team played a Tidebinder, I think, but Javier and I decided to play the Aklazotzo with the Tidebinder exactly. So when you said that, I thought, wow, that's that's wild. You did perfectly the same thing. That was cool. We had an extra Normalize as kind of a hedge against bigger decks, where we felt that having multiple was often important to win the game. Like, they can pretty easily beat one, but two is much more difficult for them. And we swapped a Cut Down for a Long Goodbye, also for those matchups that we were afraid of, both the Teema and Slowgurk, and thought that Long Goodbye is like significantly better there, we think. So, and it is a little worse against Amira, but we thought that wasn't like worse enough to make us not want to do that. So overall, small changes. The biggest difference was how good we thought Deep Cavern Bat was, because we just didn't think Deep Cavern Bat was as good as most other people did. And certainly we didn't want to draw multiples, which was a point of contention. I think some of our teammates played three, some played four, we played two. We're still not totally sure what the right answer is. Apparently it was more contentious than we realized. I think Mango will probably talk a bit about that, because their team was even lower on Deep Cavern Bat than we were. It's really interesting how like controversial that is, because I think four Deep Cavern Bat was kind of taken as a given at the start, certainly. And it doesn't seem like a card that should be so controversial, but it is. And I think it affects how you build your deck quite a lot as well. Like, it changes how you emphasize certain cards in your deck. So, for example, like, your Rafine stats are a lot better with Deep Cavern Bat in your deck, but you're less equipped to play, like, long games and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I think the rest is, as Anna said, pretty similar. I mean, I don't know, a big part of the appeal for Esper to us was that it's well-defined. So, of course, we're not going to have massively impactful differences between lists.
Yeah, so Again, Arne played 4 Deep Cavern Abbot, Anthony played 2, and we played 0. So I guess we are covering but honestly, like, it's tough for me to give you a good explanation, because what I did was I mostly tested the main. Like, that was my most of my focus. But our team was incredibly high on lands. I believe like 9 players played lands in our team. Basically, the only people that didn't play lands are the ones that didn't feel comfortable enough to play it. But like in the testing house and even before, lands was just beating everyone. It felt like there was no bad matchup. But mostly, and the biggest reason for that, was that our Esper's deck didn't have bat. So I think that was our biggest failure in testing. At the end, lands did very well. Like, we had 3 decks in the house, lands, Convoke, and Esper. Lens and Convoke had over 65% win rate, and Esper had around 25. So I would say I chose the wrong one of the 3. Yeah, it is. Once again, for the second PT in a row, I select a pretty bad deck for the PT, and then I managed to play the deck that wins the Pro Tour at the PTQ. Because I played Domain for the PTQ, and I managed to get there on Sunday. By the way, now that Arne is here, we can say that last Pro Tour in Chicago, Arne actually gave me his physical deck to win the PTQ with vampires, and this time it was Samuele Stratti who gave me his physical Cornucopia Domain deck.
Maybe the person that gives you the deck will top 8 the next Pro Tour. Maybe that's a given for the Stratti.
Maybe. That's true. Also, another fun fact in that is that both times the Cavern of Souls that you guys give me are the one from Lost Cavern of Ixalan. So actually, I've never won anything. I've won 2 tournaments with Cavern of Souls, but they were never mine, despite, of course, owning them. Overall, I'm not happy with the constructed deck choice I made. Although Mogd, who is the player that we all basically just fully trusted, he went 4-0 in Esper mirror matches and 0-6 in the non-mirror matches. So that was the record of these Esper with no Deep Cavern Abbot, I would say. Although I played four mirror matches in day one and I went 1-2-1. So it's not that it was very good for me, the least either. I went 2-1 in draft and then 1-3-1 in constructed. Actually picking up a crucial draw against... this is kind of funny, against Jabberwocky. So we sit down, we're both 3-1, okay? So we only need one win between us two to make day 2. And we will, both of us will not make day 2. Which is incredibly hard because we need to draw that game and then lose 3 in a row. Both of us. Which is what happened. So it is definitely an achievement for both of us to be knocked out. But... thankfully, Jabberwocky actually played his winning in against Sean Gerdard, our team member, beekeeper, and Sean won, made day 2, and then won all matches in day 2 to top 8. So it is a very cool story, and then lost to the eventual winner. I guess we haven't mentioned the top 8. I even rehearsed the name of the top 8 to make sure I got the name right. Because these are hard names to read for a European. All right, let's get it. Yuta Takahashi, Lucas Ducao, Takumi Matsura, Yoshihiko Ikawa, Ray Zhang, Arne Uschenberg, Jason Yi, and Sean Goddard. That's a great top 8.
Yeah.
I can speak about each of these player to have achieved something, you know, very good in the past. So it is super cool. The eventual winner is Yoshihiko Ikawa, who went undefeated in constructed, which is unbelievable. He went 10-0, 7-0 in Swiss. Then, you know, you drop because he was first, and then 3-0 in the top 8, beating Biki Ishan in all 3 post cyber game in the quarterfinal, playing masterfully, sideboarding. Like, it was honestly, it was. I rewatched the top 8. Every match that Ikawa played was so well played. So, yeah, I mean. He won the tournament, so obviously he was great, but, you know, he was extremely good, I think, by the way he played.
Yeah, I was rooting for Ikawa the whole time. Just watching his match against Sean, I was like, oh, wow, he's definitely going to win this tournament. Like, wow, yeah. Very impressive.
Yeah, because it was a bad matchup. He started 0-2 and then he won the third game, which was so hard to win, honestly. It was so hard to win. Like, he bluffed and it was amazing. It was very, very
definitely good. Recommend people watching that, yeah.
Then, by reading the name, there's some very cool, maybe nickname that you don't know. So we have Lucas Ducal, which is Duke 12, the magical line beast that wins so much, qualifies to Mox top 8 through leaderboard multiple times. And then we have Ray Zhang, CFT Sock, the inventor of basically every unfair deck strategy that goes around in Magic these days. Of course, we have World Champion 2022, Yuta Takahashi. And I mean, again, I can say many things about every displayer, but yeah, great top 8.
Yeah.
What about you, Arne? What can we say about you?
I wanted to quickly shout out just the immense success that the Sanctum of All team has brought to the Pro Tour, especially like CFT SOC, which I learned was an acronym. I learned that weekend for the comp. What's it called? Sake for the comp? No.
Combo for the sake of combo. It's so good. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Just dedication, utmost dedication to the craft.
Yeah, I think, I believe Jason Yi is the player who won the limited open in Las Vegas, that was also part of the top 8. And then they came very short to top 8 Chicago. I believe they lost couple of win and ins for the top 8.
Yeah, I've heard that Chicago was their first PT. So they just went casually top 16 into top 8 in the first two PTs. Apparently winning the Vegas Open. I mean, this is some Nathan Steuer material here. This is a quite also, some success in early stages
actually,
of competitiveness.
Wow.
Yeah, Pivo played the first round or maybe the second round against Jason Yi of the tournament. And he lost. This is insane. So like Pivo is very ahead in draft. And then he's has four swamp, okay? So your opponent has four swamps. Pivo's winning and goes six mana dance. You know, put a land into play, get a token. And your opponent plays double Mindbreak Trap and moves for 26 out of four swamps. Archive Trap, Archive Trap. Yeah, that is like, you know? Like...
That's great.
Oh, it's crazy. And the opponent was Jason Yu, ended up going 3-0 in that draft with double Mindbreak Trap. First pick in it, actually, like in the draft.
That's amazing.
So, the Pro Tour is amazing. All these stories are amazing. And I believe our goal here is to just, you know, bring up those stories from the PT that maybe are not as shared. Very, very happy to be part of it. Very happy to be part of it for another time, qualifying once again. With a different, a non-conventional way, let's say, to the next Pro Tour.
I believe you don't want to sweat it every single time.
Yeah, I believe somebody said that, and that's just definitely true, that qualified via, like, to all the Pro Tour of the season without Pro Tour or RC, which is like 2 PTQ and the limited open, which is definitely a funny stats. But yeah, so the deck I chose to play was the domain control that Samuel Estati played at the Pro Tour, going 7-3 with it. And I just decided to trust him. He had Ancient Cornucopia over Topiary Stomper. And that is, I think, to this day, still a debate, right? What was in Canada? Because I've been tagged by a bunch of people that did well with the Cornucopia deck in Canada. I believe there's no domain deck in the top 8, but there is a domain deck, I believe, in the top 16 that was playing the Cornucopia. So I guess I am taking some pride in that.
Have you found it? I don't think it's there.
I haven't found it. No, I guess it's not in top 16.
Yeah, maybe
whatever. Whatever. Anyway, the
maybe top 16 if someone would have conceded to them. Okay.
Yeah.
I won't go there.
Top 32. Zachary got there with the, yeah, the full. No, he cut the one off. It's not playing. He's not playing 61. I was playing 61 cards. The analyze the pollen.
To analyze the pollen. Okay.
Yeah. No, but I truly believe that the Cornucopia is great and deserves more testing. Like the, it adds a lot in the like Convoke, Esper, Dimir matchup by just gaining life and just fixing your mana. Your creatures doesn't matter too much in those matchups because like you have to play a sweeper eventually, pretty early. It also lets your cover non-named dinosaur. Yeah, obviously like against the other matchups is worse, like against lands and the mirror match against control, you'd rather have Stomper. But I think the edge that that gives you against the creature deck is actually bigger. I don't know what you guys think about it, if you ever tested it maybe before the PT.
I haven't tested it, but I want to, real quick, before Anthony can chime in, I just want to say that I looked at your list after the event and all, and I was like, wow, this deck looks pretty good. I think this deck looks very good against aggro and midrange, and yeah, it was a great call for the PDQ, and would have been probably a really good call for the Pro Tour as well. So I just want to put that out there. Like, the ill-timed explosion is, you know, a very strong effect, and making good use of that, and just, yeah. Looks like a really good deck.
Yeah, I think it might have been good before. I think it's probably much less good now, ironically. Like, I think it might have been great for the PT and the PTQ, but now I wouldn't want to play it because of the way the metagame has evolved since then to favor a lot more control decks, for example, and mirror matches where I don't want like these cards and would much rather have the cards like the Stompers or the more ramp spells. So, yeah, I think it was good then. Now I'm much more skeptical. We didn't try Ancient Cornucopia before the PT. It looked okay when I was watching your matches. I think it might be something I would consider in addition to Stomper rather than instead of it, but I don't have very strong opinions about it yet.
Yeah. This is definitely something I'm testing these days, and I have I kind of got, so like, again, I was testing a lot of domain for the PT, and the matchup against lands was definitely bad, but also the inconsistency of the deck was bad. Like, you say you have a good matchup against Convoke, you say you have a good matchup against Esper, but you're just, you know, still like so inconsistent that that it's just a little bit scary to play a deck like that. But the Cornucopia deck just felt more smooth, like the fact that you don't need double green, you don't need to play four forest, you don't need to, again, like cover naming dinosaurs, it's quite bad, you just want to name angel most of the time. And also timed explosion, like in the PTQ, I played against two control and one lens, and just casting this to draw two was pretty good. Actually, most of my losses were against the Legends deck, because I also played the PTQ on Saturday with Domain, although it was the regular list. I lost to Legends then, and I lost to Legends on Sunday, so playing against Legends is super tricky, and I guess it's just so hard to, such a hard deck to either play with or against it. It's really, really complicated. Did it do well in Canada, the Four Color Legends?
I don't think so.
I think one person made top 12, I believe.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Yeah.
Oh, top 8. There you go, yeah. Jean-Philippe.
Oh, someone did top 8 with it. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like a deck that I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I think Anna explained RC. Well. I don't know. Like, it is fundamentally, like, there's a lot of like weird stuff that goes on in some of the games, but at the core of it, you can also just play creatures that are good on rate and removal spells, and just play normal magic as well. So, it's less weird than it looks.
Yeah, I think it's pretty difficult to play for sure, because there's like so much intricate little math and shenanigans, like Slowgurk to Overslime, just read the card and you know it's going to be complicated. So that hinders the deck, I believe. Like, at the Pro Tour, when very high level players that prep the deck, that have a team around it, have great plans, around, you know, all the matchups, they're going to have much more success, I believe, than someone that just copies the list from the Sanctum of All team and then plays it in their RC. So that's going to drop the win rate likely. And you know, it's out in the open now, so people will maybe be a little bit more prepared for it. Had a good weekend at the Pro Tour. But I think I saw some stats, and it had good win rates even in Brazil. And he did it win Brazil, I believe. Like Jonathan Lobo Melamed, I think won the whole thing with it actually.
He's a crusher.
He didn't check that.
Definitely a crusher. Who's also a crusher? I want to shout that out real quick. Johnny Goodman, Ginky MTG, back on the Pro Tour. Great guy, fun guy. I have never met him in. Oh no, I've actually met him in person. True, I did at Minneapolis. Oh no, but yeah, no, I was like just fond of the handshake days back then, and he was a great teammate and just a fun dude. So,
you'll see him again soon.
That's true.
Yep.
Yeah. It's awesome. Jonathan Malamed indeed won the. Won the tournament. Okay. The standard met. Harne, actually, are you coming to Naples to play the RC?
Yes, I am.
Ooh, see you there. Nice. Do you know what you play?
I'm kind of in a serious testing group for the event, so.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Don't
worry if I put you on the spot.
No, it's fine. Like, please go ahead and ask. I just cannot give you an answer, unfortunately.
It's okay.
Mangers,
I still am. I'm still undecided because, well, the domain deck is. It's just that I have a problem. I mean, I have many problems, but one of them is that I can't play a two tournaments with the same deck. Like, I have to change, you know? It's just
a rule. That's just a set in stone settings on Andrea Mengucci.
I need to feel something something new every time I play a deck. Like the feeling of having to read. So I was playing this card in the sideboard, Seismic Wave, which I have never seen before. And it was in my sideboard, and I cast it against in the final against Rastaf, who had in play two Pyrexian Might token from Mirex and a Siren, and I thought this card would just, you know, sweep, kill them all, and then instead it says non-artifact creature, so I go like top three, kill your creatures, and he goes, which one do you target? And then I read the card, and I go like, oh, I'll target one of the one of the Might.
So Mango, you're telling us that you always have to play a different deck every tournament, and now you're also telling us stories where you don't know what your cards do. Like, is it possible that these are like related, maybe, or you know?
Yeah,
you
the journey of learning what Aklatzot does is definitely a journey. Oh. Like, this is the second tournament I play with Aklatzot, and I learn so many new things every time. For example, I didn't know that you needed to be either you or your opponent on one card to flip it. And this is such a strange effect to do, but yeah. Also, in my deck, I was playing a very nice Nombo, who happened in my winning in for day two, which is a curved out... Sorry, I had in my hand, I didn't cast it, Danik and Lord Skitter. And I was playing against lands, so I couldn't play Dandy on turn 2 because my goal was to exile lands with Lord Skitter. So, you know, if you play Esper, don't put these cards in your deck. You choose one of them. I think it's my suggestion after I learned that.
I mean, not necessarily, but yeah, it's certainly an unfortunate non-synergy.
Yeah. Also, I learned how bad is Sheoldred. Since I played Domain, like, I felt that it was okay, but when I played Esper... It was just so bad. Like, did you guys play it?
Nope.
No, of course you didn't. Yeah. Yeah, so that's another card that, you know, if I tested a little bit more, I would definitely not have played in my Esper midrange deck.
Well, there's definitely a time and a place with Sheoldred. It's just that this PT wasn't, but I could see Sheoldred becoming good again. Like, there are specific reasons that, you know, Sheoldred isn't as well positioned now, which is mostly... that a bunch of the, like, one of the go big decks can actually just go over the top of it, and that there's so many mid-range decks that answer it efficiently in the matchup where you don't want to fall behind on board that it becomes bad. But It's not like Sheltered is like a horrible card forever or anything. It just cycles, and it's kind of been doing that ever since it was printed, cycling up and down in terms of how good it is. It is a bit weird that you were the only one to play Sheltered and also the only one to not play any Deep Cavern Bat, because I feel like those cards kind of work together, but I don't know.
My testing was very much against lands and against domain, where Sheltered is actually pretty good. Like, it's just one creature threat to follow up a Wrath is pretty good, but you know, again, it's not great in the mirror match, definitely. And that was what I played the most at the tournament. But nonetheless, I'm excited for the next PT is Modern, where I'm gonna play my blue red Murktide. No, we'll see.
You're tempting me, Mengu, but maybe that's...
Oh yeah, Anthony. Yes. Do you know that Arne played a blue red Murktide at the RC in Ghent?
I vaguely remember that. Yeah, he did. How do you go?
He was...
I had a good start to the tournament.
Yeah, you had a good start. You had a very good start. You were, 8-0?
Yeah, I was 8-0 and then lost against Jeskai Breach for the final. But then I just got demolished, I think, by 3 times Yakmov and 1 time Coffers on day 2. I got paired 6 times into Yakmov and 2 times into Coffers. 2 of the worst matchups for the deck. And somehow escaped with a 4-4 record against those. But yeah, I overestimated Murktide against Yakmov, to be fair. I thought that matchup was a little bit better. I got a little baited. Sorry to shout you out like that, Gracias por tanto, Mauro Sasso. But like, in his guide, I bought the guide and was like, favored against Yakmov. I'm like, nice. We have this blue red Murktide deck that is favored against Yakmov. And he was like describing this eloquently, this plan of like Brotherhood's End and all that, and boarding out all the one drops. And like, yeah, this makes sense. Then I played against couple people on Magic Online Leagues, had the Stern Scolding, had the Brotherhood's End, everything lined up, you feel like a god, and then go into the tournament and you're like, actually, I've got the Soul Cauldron, huh? So that's a pretty good card, just solos me. Not great.
Yeah, if you follow the Mangus guide, I'll tell you that Murktide is actually no bad matchup, and only, sorry, no good matchups and only bad ones. That is the...
Maybe you guys should team up and then we have a realistic...
No, yeah, I could never be tricked into playing Murktide, except I probably will this weekend, but you know, I could never be tricked.
Speaking of decks that you played, what did you play? Let me see your list at the Canadian RC.
Why do I feel like you said that so ominously?
You played Golgari Midrange, because I saw a picture with Tulliano de Ville signed by Reed Duke, but I actually didn't check your list.
Oh yeah,
was your list from Reed? No.
No, it's kind of like, right? I just changed some things that I thought made sense for the current standard. Like, for example, all these mid-range decks play a million top downs, but I just think Esper's not a very good deck. So I just decided to not play so many cut downs. I think it's like okay in other matches, but like you only play like a lot of cut downs specifically because you want to attack Esper, right? And I think it doesn't make a ton of sense. I also think you can't play a whole lot of Duresses and cutdowns in Golgari specifically, because it's not a deck with card filtering, and these light conditional answers are pretty expensive to draw in multiples with this kind of deck. So yeah, I think Duress and cutdown actually fight for space in Golgari, so I didn't want to play a lot of both of them, and I think Duress is much better than cutdown with the way I expected the field to go. But yeah, most of this is just like Anna said, like Golgari is just fine. Like, I wasn't like super excited about playing it, but I knew I didn't want to play Esper, and I thought, well, I've played a lot with Golgari, so I'll just play that instead. Like, it's not the most, it's just a reasonable argument for something, but not a particularly compelling one. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of the things you can see are similar to what Channel Fireball registered with Golgari. I was surprised by the Pillage the Bog. I just assumed that card was going to be horrible, but saw Reed had it in his list, and when I tested it, I was quite impressed for exactly the same reasons that he outlined. Like, you just care about finding specific really impactful cards like Ixis Command so much. But yeah, I mean, Golgari was fine. I didn't do very well, but it didn't really have too much to do with the deck, I think. I just played poorly in round 1 because I was so unfamiliar against the Toxic deck and got pretty unlucky in the other 2 losses. So, you know, I did poorly with the deck, but I think it's okay.
Yes. Speaking of the Toxic deck, it is very unexpected to see it first in the Swiss with the 11-1-1 record, which is, you know, a deck that basically, like, I don't want to say nobody played it because I don't know, but like definitely hasn't seen a play at the Pro Tour. And then just all of a sudden, boom, here it is. Is the reason that it beats on the Domain and Lands?
I don't know. I think what happened there, some Canadians met up together in a pub, maybe had a beer, and were just like brainstorming about what to do. And that's ended up on that bad Toxic.
I think that is it, actually. I think Pascal's group all brought Toxic, or a lot of them brought Toxic, and they've had like really good metagame reads in the past. Like, they were kind of responsible for Lotus Field blowing up in Pioneer from the first RC set, and the Domain Rhinos deck. So, you know, I was kind of excited when I found out they were all playing Toxic. You know, maybe it was a sick metagame call. I think Pascal called it like the worst deck he's played, but one of the best positioned, or something along those lines. And I think that's probably it. Like, it's really good against decks like Domain. And it honestly didn't look as bad against mid-range decks as I had assumed. Like a lot of the spot removal spells that people are playing are not fantastic against them. And I was kind of impressed watching the deck just in general. And it is true that the deck also now has fast lands that it didn't have, like, when it was played all the way back then. So, I don't know, this deck seemed a lot better than it looked, I think.
If I can add to that, also the mana base is kind of interesting in the sense that it doesn't play many green cards at all. I think some lists didn't even play the Slaughter Singer. This list has two, and it only, like, I remember one list only had four Rot Priest in the main deck. So it makes the mana at least, you know, less strained if you're like a blue white deck with a very light splash of green, foregoing that 3-mana 4/4, which I think is, you know, sort of the auto inclusion when you go and lay out the deck. But they decided that it was just a little too slow and they wouldn't to go under them. Good choice. I think it really helped that Esper was less presented, represented, because I think Pest Control is a bit of a problem for this deck. But yeah, with Esper on the decline, as you said, like all the slower decks, probably Legends. I don't know, Legends might also not be having a great time against this deck. It's maybe a fine metagame call, yeah.
Yeah, it's also actually very hard to play against this deck. Like, especially because, well, most people wouldn't have played at all against Toxic before this weekend, right? And all the bounce spells, the March, the Serum Snare, like, it's actually very hard to play against this deck, especially trying to figure out how exactly they might kill you. Because at some point, you know, at the start, it feels pretty comfortable. You just take, like, even the first couple of points are quite dangerous because it enables the Seed Core. So there's just, like, specific breakpoints that matter a lot, where the Seed Core turns on and then they start to get within range of killing you with, like, a sudden combo with Rot Priest. And it's really hard to know those without having played the matchup a bit before. So definitely practice against this deck. It's not as simple as you just kill their things and they're not going to function, which is how a lot of people might think of the deck because of similar decks in the past. Like, yeah, it's a tricky one.
Yeah, great points.
There is a very strange Esper deck that did well. That came actually up to the second place.
Let's talk about that. That's interesting.
From,
I don't think this is the weird one.
Mills. Oh, sorry.
That play had Sean, a great playmate, by the way. But yeah, go on.
It was a Sean?
No, it wasn't Sean. He played a normal
three
deck. You're looking for DMAC.
Esper. Well, three Esper deck made the top eight. That's not bad for a deck that you guys said it was badly positioned.
It was badly positioned. I would definitely think that Esper is a little better going forward.
It's time to tilt my head around to read this card, Invasion of Amonkhet. It's a battle for 3 mana. When it comes into play, each player mills 3 cards, then each opponent discards a card and you draw a card. So it's like a card advantage engine, and if you attack it down from 4 loyalty or whatever counter, and it turns around and it becomes a creature that clones something in the graveyard, like a body double, I would call it. But yeah.
Anna, didn't you guys play this set in Minneapolis? Maybe you did. I don't know. I think Channel 5 did though, right?
Not me and Arne, but
yeah, we didn't. We were entrapped. Some of the others on the team unfortunately chose this deck. It was I think we got Atraxa and Itali back then. What did they do? They got rid of the thing in one swoop. Oh, I think they played like 3 mana, 5 damage. And here is Warcrafting.
Yes, something like that. Yeah.
So the combo here is the Aklazotz thing, where when Aklazotz dies, normally you get back the temple. But if you've copied Aklazotz from your graveyard, which means it had to go to the graveyard, which, how does that even happen? I guess you mill it over. Anyways, that's at least what I heard on Twitter. That's a super cool thing. That this deck does, but yeah, you have to have an Aklazotz in the graveyard to copy it, so it's
difficult to. Yeah, but what happens if you copy it?
Well, then you get the Aklazotz, right? All the abilities, same card, and then when Aklazotz dies, instead of getting the temple, you get the backside, the Lazardap convert, and you can instantly choose to copy the Aklazotz in your graveyard again, or whatever other creature. So you get it's essentially an undying creature that comes back untapped immediately. With the Aklazotz, yeah.
Because it says, when Aklazotz dies, return it to the battlefield tapped and transformed.
Oh, never mind, then it's tapped.
Tapped and transformed. So you just, the Lazardap convert dies, and it returns as a Lazardap convert?
Oh, does it return as the invasion? No.
No, I think it just returns as the flipped invasion. Anthony, as our judge of the podcast, what do you say about this interaction?
I'm not a judge, but hang on, so it dies... Return tapped and transfer. Yeah, but it's from the side from which it died, right? No, mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's an Aklazotz. Yeah, I think it would return on the backside again, but that seems. I'm kind of wondering what the idea is, because it's not like you have like a Sack Outlet or something that abuses this.
No,
right?
Wait a second. This deck. Yeah, this deck doesn't play Raphine.
Yeah, that's what they cut for the invasion. Which, I'm not really sure. Like, I mean, I kind of understand thinking that Raphine forces you to build your deck in a certain way, but I also don't really see how this deck exploits that. I'm not saying this in the way that a lot of Magic players say I don't get it when they just think it's bad. I legitimately don't understand. Like, I think we're missing something, but I don't know what it is. Because I feel like there must be something with the invasion going on, or the way that it changes your deck. Like, for example, there's Virtue of Persistence, right? Like, that implies building towards like a bigger game, for example, but it should be more than that, right? There's like Tidebinders as well, which are kind of aggressive.
Or flanker in the sideboard.
Oh, that's nice though.
What? Mill opponent's Atraxa, attack down invasion. That sounds like a...
That would be nice. Yeah, so it's probably sick there. But for example, if you're playing as like Team Milans or something and you have invasion, I really, really don't want to mill them for three. Like, I guess no, maybe that's why they have Tidebinders. I don't know. I feel like I'm out of my depth looking at this deck. I'm not sure what's. I'm sure. As I know, this is a Patrick Wu deck, so I'm sure he'll talk about it.
My first response was also like, "What?" So I'm fully with you. Saying that you don't understand it, it's out of your depth, is a very, I guess, polite way of saying. I mean, yeah. Let's leave it at that. I'm not going to add anything. I don't want to make myself. I'm popular anyhow.
Yeah, this deck nonetheless earned a Pro Tour invite to. So I guess top 8. Yeah, very nice, very nice. Yeah. Mono red.
Simic artifacts too. The Pro Tour invite.
Destroyed this artifact. It was sick. Like.
What
it was
is this?
Really impressive.
Tough Cookie, Teething Wyrmlet.
Tough Cookie.
Surge Engine. I'd never seen this card in my life. Never seen this guy in my life.
Modern player.
Surge Engine.
The hard hitting question was like very impressive in this deck. Watching the matches, like it's just a very effective way to catch up on tempo. Like that's a cut down that's actually kind of good. I actually missed that the Teething Wyrmlet getting Death Touch makes the hard hitting question quite a bit better. Like it's just so funny. You just watch. Then like blow up, you know, whatever for one mana with hard hitting question. But yeah, this deck was it looked quite good to me. I was surprised. Like it certainly like seemed like in Canada the aggressive decks preying on the domain decks that were the most popular archetype at that tournament, surprisingly. Did really well. So like mono red, Simic Artifacts, Bant Toxic, they've all suddenly come out to play. I feel like this might be the best one of them. I know that something interesting was that one of this player's friends, Theo, told me that he's been playing this deck for a while, which is how he kind of had that perspective. Because I feel like you wouldn't think to play the Tough Cookie deck unless you'd been playing the Tough Cookie deck already, right? Like, it just wouldn't be on anyone else's radar at all. But it was impressive to watch as well. Like, for example, I saw some cool tricks. Like, he was playing against a Team of Lands opponent. He put all his maps, all map tokens on the center of the Nameless City, and then he used Kitesail Arsonist when his opponent had nothing in play to turn his Sentinel into a treasure, so that when his opponent cast Ill-Timed Explosion and the Larsenist died, the Sentinel would, you know, you'd get a huge Sentinel back, and then you can play Tough Cookie, and suddenly, right out, immediately after your opponent sweeps, you're attacking them with 9 or something. And so this deck was, like, surprisingly resilient to sweepers against other aggressive decks. You have a bunch of life gain and big creatures and some interaction. It's definitely, I would take this deck seriously, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
This deck would be fun for me to play to learn every single card in the deck.
Well, you know, I got is a there Soul any Cauldron.
Yeah. Is there any combo with the Cauldron? No, it's just for value.
Maybe the search.
Yeah, it's just value. I mean, I don't know. If you turn all your creatures into Tough Cookie, how can you ever lose? Oh, yeah, and there's a Soul Cauldron Gingerbread combo. You know, the one that won you your limited, your PT qualification at some point. So you know those cards.
Yeah. Yeah. In draft, though. Also, there's Zoetic Glyph, which I've never seen.
What? That card's actually good.
You didn't draft at all?
This set, no. Never drafted.
Apparently, yeah, wow.
Yeah. Very cool, very cool. Congrats. And also Mono Red. Let's talk about that. Mono Red. A deck that I've been playing a little bit of Arena these days, and I face this deck a lot, so I'm familiar with all these cards. But at the PT, I don't think did anybody do well with Mono Red?
Yeah, I think so. I think someone went 8-2, and I think this was pretty much the list they played. Honestly, I think they just copy pasted that list.
Oh, nice. Oh, 4 Urabrust Forge. Wow.
Yeah, it was a unique in approach by deck. One of the Japanese players.
Impressive. Cool. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, the forge is really important, okay. I think. Like, the card is not on rate very good. Like, this is not, like, a good card, in air quotes, but it does something very unique in that it punishes people overloading on removal a lot. So I think the forge is kind of critical to this deck being good.
Yeah, I've seen another player who, and I guess it was another tournament, but another take on Mono Red, but yeah, there's a... my teammate over here, Liam Kane, who also got a PT invite with Teamer Analyst, another fellow player alongside of me who won the PTQ in Chicago. So he was able to queue to all three Pro Tour of the season.
Well, your teammates did pretty well. I see Eduardo just missed as well.
Yes, Eduardo, and also, where is it? Jack Potter over here. He lost
he was very
a lot well. Of the last rounds. Started very strong. Oh, Kevin Angtil.
I was watching him, and that's why I started to be higher on the Man Toxic deck, watching him play it. It was very impressive. He was playing it much more patiently than I think people might imagine you're supposed to play this deck. So that kind of gave me the idea that there's something more going on here than I had thought. Yeah.
Kevin made a really deep run at the Pro Tour as well. It was 8-1-1 at that point.
Yeah, finished 18th place. Very cool.
With the Bronco deck. Bronco. Dude only plays sweet decks.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude only plays sweet decks or handicaps himself every tournament. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
Yeah, we would never make fun of someone who is handicapping himself with deck choice every tournament, Mangu. So that's
it's okay. I have my eye. I have my eyes on the important target, which is the PTQ, the Sunday PTQ. Actually, I have a screenshot of a chat with Alex Rohan, and he goes, "Good luck, Mango, in the PT." And he goes, "Like, nah, I'll probably go 8-8." And he goes, "No, why?" So it's okay. I'll win the Sunday PTQ. And I didn't go 8-8, but I did win the Sunday PTQ. All right. Anything else you guys want to share? Actually, Arne, you know, you got this platform, you got this moment. Do you do any content? Is there any way the listeners of this podcast can find you, you know, on various platforms?
I do enjoy streaming on Twitch from time to time on a Twitch/Arne Oschenbild. And I also doing YouTube content. We usually do arena formats here and there. Actually, just uploaded a video about the Pro Tour and my deck, so go check that out if you're curious.
All right, I will put in the show notes on YouTube if you're watching this video on YouTube. Okay, Arnett, Wish, and Beth. Actually, I wasn't subscribed, so I subscribed.
I cannot believe this.
Wow.
I'm sorry, but you know, at least now you have one more subscriber.
Well, now you have to go to Mengu's workshop as well and subscribe from that as well. Yeah, otherwise, we're not friends anymore.
That's true. No,
just kidding. I'm joking. All good. Let me just unsubscribe real quick from Mengu.
13 minutes ago, did you post while you were on the podcast?
Yeah, I was just recording. I have clone technology, you know.
No, you scheduled, biggie. It's okay, you can schedule. Okay, so you played Esper in your video, very cool. Oh, I love the thumbnail. That's good.
It's great.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, yeah. You only make prototype 8 so often, so you gotta milk them, right? Squeeze everything out of them.
Yeah.
I have a podcast in 2 hours, a podcast tomorrow, an interview in the New York Times on Saturday. No, just kidding. but please reach out. I need attention, please. Validation, attention.
Give it to
him. If you are listening to this podcast and have your own podcast, you're welcome to invite Arne to talk to you about Standard. And
yeah.
But you can't disclose what he's going to play in Naples, though. So
I cannot. But it might or might not be Simic Artifact or Bad Toxic. Who knows?
Simic Artifact. Man, I hope I don't play against this deck. Because like you have to read all the cards and then you have to remember what they do.
Then you put Go for the Throat on the stack and then you realize it doesn't have any targets and you're very unhappy.
Zero targets? No, it does. Sending off the Nameless CT, the Vermlet, Siren.
Well, it doesn't kill the 5/4 that's gonna beat you down. Yeah. So.
Wait, why doesn't it?
Well, it's an artifact.
Oh, it's an artifact. Okay.
Yeah, Go for the Throat doesn't kill artifacts, man. Just so you know.
Wait, can you put this on a map token? I guess you can.
Yeah, why not?
Wow.
It's just an ensoul that has sort of like the ability to be good against removal if they discover 3 for 1 more mana. It's quite a good card in those type of decks.
I'm impressed.
Come on, Mengu, you wanted a sweet new deck for the Naples. Let's go.
Here you go.
Let's go. I even own 4 Agatha Soul Cauldron that I bought and never played. So this could be
a
chance.
Broken card in Modern, so it can't be that bad. Yeah.
All right, Anthony, what is your plan? What are you doing this weekend?
I'm gonna play the NRG Team Careers event in Indianapolis before I go back to Australia. So that'll be fun.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah, there's a modern event on Saturday. I don't know what I'll play, but I think I'm being handed a Murktide deck. So for the first time in my life, I'll play Murktide in anything serious. That's going to be fun. And yeah, we'll be looking forward to it.
Who are you teaming up with?
I'm teaming with Theo Jung, one of your teammates, and Cole Cunningham. So yeah.
Nice. Good team.
What's your format in the Team Trios?
So I had a deal with Theo as well, where whichever of us did better at the Pro Tour would get to choose which format we play in the Team Trios. And also, whoever lost not only didn't get to choose their own format, they have to take the trash out of the Airbnb every day and be referred to as Trash Boy, right? So, and I thought I was in a pretty good spot, because at one point I was like, I was 3-2 and Theo was 1-4, so I thought I was pretty free from the Trash Boy title. And we both ended day 2 at 4-4. So then now I'm starting to sweat. And then we get paired directly to each other. So we basically play directly for the Trash Boy title. I punt game 3. And he finishes 9-7. I finish 8-8. So,
wow.
I mean, I can't really complain. I earned the title. So yeah, I'm playing Pioneer. He's playing Standard. Paul's playing one. So.
You know what you're playing, Pioneer?
Pardon?
Do you know what will you play?
Yeah, I'm going to play Phoenix, you know, which makes sense. I've played that deck a lot, and I have that guide out with Isaac Bullwinkle, which you can...
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, you can look
into
that.
That's true. We can shout it out. MTG Band Card, of course, is now tweeting a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean a lot more, because before it was tweeting 0. So it's... yeah, so you and Isaac posted Is it Phoenix Guide? I guess you can that people can contact you or Isaac in order to acquire it.
Yeah, I think we did. We put some work into this, and hopefully it's useful for people playing in the RCQs. Because we talked about the RCs being standard, but the RCQs right now are Pioneer. So, yeah, if you're interested in that, we have that out.
For sure, for sure. That's cool. And if you want to play Modern, Anthony, I have a deck for you. If you want to change and don't want to play
Slingshot,
that deck is sweet though. Yeah, maybe.
I posted the deck picture somewhere, but I'm concerned that if I click on that, Streamlabs explodes.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I'll play a tournament on Sunday as well. It's gonna be Modern, and I'm gonna go with the Grulagra deck that I played a challenge in so long, and I came second. That was cool, and I think I'll just play this deck card for card. And yeah, I'm playing a Modern Power Level All-Star like Tarfire and Abundant Harvest. But you know, it's definitely a deck that needs some work, but so far it's working, so I guess I'll run this again. All right, that will do it for the cast. Do you guys have anything else to add?
This was great. Thank you for having me. Love doing this.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, no, it was we definitely needed a third one, so it was very happy that you asked to be. Maybe, hopefully Javier is going to be here for next week, or maybe we can get another special guest. We'll see.
Yeah, we just have to look for all the people that have beat Javier. Like, who beat him playing for top 8 in...
Not that many people beat Javier.
Okay, well, then, yes, all right. Oh.
You can talk about Ikawa taking down the World Championship very soon.
Oh, man.
He lost to Yuki Ichikawa round 2. Yoshiko Ikawa.
Oh, wow. He doesn't have a good 12. Record against the Japanese.
Takumi Matsura.
Yeah.
Wow. He lost 3 losses to Japanese and CFT Salt
wow.
And you.
Yeah, okay. Basically.
Now we know how to beat Navi. So.
Man, so, yeah, we I think it's making our job harder to find a special guest.
That's true.
If only I'd lost to Simon, you know, could invite Simon, but he beat it in round 3:15. By the way, insane run from Simon, who started 4-4 and almost went 8-0.
That would have been, like, when I saw him at like table like 5 or something in one of the latter rounds, I was like, what's going on? I thought it was 4-4. What's this?
Yeah. Oh, Simon. Also, Marco de Pivo, like, how's this guy all the time
there
in the
is.
Top tables? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Best player of Italy.
Pivo actually lost round 15. Oh, yeah, no, for sure. Pivo actually lost round 15 to Sean. We had a team kill. A mirror match, 75 mirror match, and then Pivo ID to another team member, Bernas Torres, who came 20th. So that was a good. Good performance there by Pivo, who decided to play once again the best deck of the house and then play great at the tournament. Actually, it's the second Pete in a row that he loses the... I guess he didn't lose, but yeah, going 4-2 in draft and, you know, very, very solid player, I hope. Continues the run next PT as well. All right, guys. I think we're good to wrap it up.
Sounds good.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. As always, you can support us at patreon.com/carnies to join the Discord where we share infos, deck picks, Menguchi cuisine picture. You can also watch the whole, I guess it's towards the end, but at the YouTube channel, we always upload the faces and screen sharing and all the stuff. And that's it. Thank you all for listening. Hopefully, we'll be back next week. But thanks for listening.
Cheers.
Cheers.